years.
What's up? I'm Spencer. I'm an alcoholic. First of all, it's been a while since I spoke here, and it's fucking nerve-wracking being up here with all you people, like, looking at me. It's nice, though. I'm really nervous. Anywho, I guess I should start off by saying that, I'm really grateful to be here, to be speaking at my home group tonight. It's an honor and it's a privilege. Thank you guys for having me here. So I have 20 to 25 minutes to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I know that my tendency when I speak at meetings is to spend most of the time talking about what it was like when I was in active alcoholism, active addiction. And it's been interesting trying to censor that aspect of my story and talk more about like what it's like now. So I'm gonna put that out as an intention to maybe talk more about recovery, but we'll see what happens. So I had my first drink, the first time I really got drunk. I was 8 years old, and it was a Passover Seder, and my parents decided, like, oh, you're 8, you're old enough, like, to have wine instead of the grape juice, and I was like, all right, that sounds cool. And so I got, like, really hammered, and, like, I remember coming out of a blackout to being hit in the face with a baseball, because apparently I got drunk and decided to throw a ball around with my cousins in the backyard. And the thing that stuck out for me is, like, I remember the ball hitting my face and not feeling it and being like, oh my God, I've discovered the thing that will keep me from feeling pain. And put that in the back of my mind for many years as, like, this is a thing that I can do to not feel things. My childhood wasn't, like, particularly messed up on the outside. I had everything I needed, but I was in a lot of, like, internal turmoil from a very young age. I've been in therapy of some type since I'm, like, 6, and I had a lot of trouble with social life and, like, having friends, to the point where at one point the school had me assessed for being on the autism spectrum because they were like, you have no friends. Like, how the fuck is this a thing? There's something wrong. And even to this day, even though, like, the results said that I am not on that spectrum, I'm like, no, they're wrong. I'm really, like, really craziness in my head. But from a really young age, I had this, like, voice in my head that was like, you suck. You're a piece of shit. Nobody likes you. And, like, the other thing that drunk showed me was that, like, I could drink this elixir and suddenly I wouldn't, that voice kind of turned off. And I really think that alcohol and drugs saved my life, because the way that I was going, by the time I was 8 years old, I was definitely, like, having thoughts about ending my life. And that kind of staved that off. Things got, like, really fucked up when I got to high school. And, like, so I want to say that, I did endure a lot of bullying in elementary, middle school, and high school. I don't think that's what makes me alcoholic. I know plenty of people who went through that who did not end up here. They have other issues and whatever. But if you do have that experience, it's very, it's hard to kind of get through that. And I found that I could numb out and get high and get drunk, and I wouldn't have to think about what other people thought of me. And so I did that. And by, like, junior year of high school, I, like, have basically no recollection of anything that happened that year, because I was just always fucked up. And the thing that really got me was I remember I was dating a girl who her father had died from alcoholism, and she saw the way I was drinking and was like terrified for me and would try to control my drinking for me, which of course pissed me the fuck off. So I would be like, fuck you, like I can do what I want, and like, you know, drink behind her back and like all that like nice high school shit. And I had like a little bit of an intervention in high school that I sometimes don't really remember. And it was basically like, you need to get your shit together if you want to go to college. So senior year of high school, I like only drank on weekends, and I really thought I had my shit together. And I got into school, and the moment that I got out of my parents' house, basically, I found the people who drank and did drugs the way that I did, or I thought they did, and I just latched onto them, and I was just off to the races immediately. So where that landed me was, first of all, I'm the kind of person, when I drink and use, I'm not fun to be around. Like, I'm rageful, or I'm like so depressed that like you don't even want to fucking talk to me, because I'm just like, life is horrible, like fucking no one wants to party with that, right? So it was very easy for me to fall into drinking and using by myself, because people didn't want to be around me, and to be honest, I didn't really want to be around you guys either that much, because it seemed like no one really understood that like me getting fucked up was like the thing. That was the main event in my life. It wasn't like some extracurricular activity. It was like the thing that I do. And people were getting fed up. So by my second semester of freshman year, I had like completely isolated myself from everybody on my campus. I was like in that mode where I was waking up at 5:30 p.m.-ish and then like getting fucked up and staying fucked up until like the sun came up. And then I would try to go to sleep. So I was missing all my classes, which was really nice. And I had no friends, because no one wanted to be around the fucking crazy dude who was like wandering around campus at like 3 a.m, like knocking on windows to see if people were awake. Like, it was really fucking creepy. Yeah, so, you know, basically, I got to a point where I didn't leave my dorm room for a couple months, I want to say, except to, like, go cop drugs or, like, go to the liquor store. And I was basically living in, like, a purple bathrobe with, like, Homer Simpson slippers on and, like, just shades drawn, like, dark in the room, like, you know, very, like, nice picture. And I got, like, this amazing thing, which was one day I'm like rolling up a joint and like getting prepared for the day at like 4 p.m. and I get a call from my dad, and he's like, hey, what are you up to? I was like, oh, you know, just doing some homework, writing a paper. And he goes, oh, okay, you should open your door. I was like, what the fuck? So I opened the door to my dorm room, and like my parents are fucking standing there, and like, yeah, it was a shit show, and they like physically removed me from my college campus. Like, I was asked to take a medical leave of absence. It was like, please go do that and get help, and then maybe we'll let you back in. And so even after that experience of like, it's pretty humiliating, like being physically removed from a college campus in front of like all of the people that I had already kind of shown that I was crazy. I went back to my parents' house, and I went to an outpatient rehab thing, and I was just drinking the whole time. Because in my mind, I had gotten busted for using drugs, and they were drug testing me, but they were not testing me to see if I was drinking alcohol. So I was like, okay, I can definitely get away with drinking. And I just want to, like, keep in mind that at that point, like, alcohol and drugs, like, none of it was actually working for me. Like, it was no longer doing the thing that I needed it to do. Like, it wasn't turning off that voice anymore. If anything, it was making it louder. And I I remember sitting in session with like my therapist at this like outpatient place, and he was like, you know, Spencer, I think you might have a problem with alcohol too. And I was like, fuck you. Like, I'm 19 years old. There's no fucking way that I'm... No. And he was like, all right, well then, why don't you try not drinking for the day? And I was like, okay, I got you. And I went home, and I sat on my hands, and then I remembered that there was a bottle of vodka in the freezer in my parents' house, and I waited until they went to sleep, and I cracked that shit open, and, you know, the rest is history. And it was like every fucking day I did basically that. Like every day I would wake up and I'd be like, I'm not going to drink today. And then I would. And then I'd feel shitty about myself. And then, you know, that lasted a little over a month until one night I actually made it the whole day without drinking. And I was so excited. And then I remembered that I had some like hallucinogens tucked away under my sock drawer. Kind of thing, and I was like, well, that's not really drugs, it's not really alcohol, so I think that would be fine. And so I took some of that, and yeah, I think that as soon as I took it, I was like, oh my god, what the fuck have I done? Like, I'm now like screwed. I'm on this like train for the next, you know, several hours, like I have all this information about the fact that I'm like definitely, you know, an addict and an alcoholic, and like, this is gonna be bad. And what ended up happening was, like, I went to sleep because I thought that would make it better, and I come to in the middle of the night with, like, you know, flames on my roof and everything, you know, just like really tripping the fuck out. But I just remember screaming at the top of my lungs, like, God, just fucking take my life, just let me die in my sleep so that I don't have to like wake up and continue to do the same shit over and over and over again. And that was like a common theme in my life at this point. It was like almost every night I would basically cry myself to sleep asking that I would just die in my sleep, and would like imagine like my heart just giving out. But I came to the next day, and there was a like an AA meeting book like on like next to my bed, because like the therapist at the rehab was like, yeah, you should probably check out AA. And I was like, fuck you. So I found this meeting book, and I was like, all right, fuck it, I might as well go to this meeting. So I went to my first AA meeting. That was May 12th of 2008, and I haven't had a drink or a drug since that day. And the reason that that happened is I showed up to this meeting, and I didn't think there was any way anyone would relate to me, or that I would, you know, fit in with this, like, fucking, in my mind, this, like, group of old men in trench coats talking about losing their wives and jobs and cars. And what I actually found was a group of younger people at the meeting who were like, dude, you should totally come out to dinner with us. And I was like, what the fuck? Because, like, for the past several months of my life, I was literally the guy that, like, people would go out to dinner and they would tell me that they were going out to like Applebee's, let's say. And I would like go to Applebee's, like waiting to see them. But it turned out they had actually gone somewhere else, and they were just like doing that so that they would get me off their back. Like, no one wanted to be around me. And so the fact that people were inviting me out to the diner, I was very confused. And I was like, are you sure? Like, and it was at that diner, basically, I learned about this meeting, and I learned about the fact that there are young people who get sober in AA, which, you know, obviously. And they pushed me to get a sponsor, and they were like, you need to work the steps if you want to get better. And I was like, you know, still in my like drug-addled, fucked-up brain, I was like, I don't know what you're saying, but I'm okay, that sounds like a plan. I guess that's what you do here. So, you know, I got into the steps really early, and I'm grateful for that. So for me, step one was really, it was actually fairly easy. You know, I had the benefit of having tried to stop drinking on my own a few times. Like, when I was younger, I had a very strong determination not to drink. And at one point, when I was in, like, my senior year of high school, because I was trying to get into college. And I remember I went to this party with some friends, and you know, they were drinking champagne, and I was like, oh, I could just have one cup of champagne, you know, it'll be fine. It's just like, it's like soda. And my girlfriend at the time was like, that sounds fucking crazy, but okay, do what you, you know, fucking do whatever you want to do. So, you know, I had this like half of solo cup of champagne, and I remember that was probably one of the only times in my life that I've had like one alcoholic beverage. And that's where I found out about the phenomenon of craving, because I had that one, and then the entire party was like, they knew that I was trying to not drink, so they wouldn't let me back in the kitchen to get more liquor. And I was just like screaming at people. And I looked fucking insane. And I was like, felt like someone was like wrenching my guts. Like I needed more, and they just didn't fucking understand. And I remember, you know, reading in the Big Book that like that phenomenon of craving only occurs in alcoholics. Like if you've ever had that feeling, there's a possibility that you were probably an alcoholic, because most people don't have that. And like, I don't come from an alcoholic family. Like my parents drink fairly like normally, I guess. And like my brother, like I've watched them have half a glass of wine and like let it sit there. And to me, that's fucking alcohol abuse. Like that just doesn't make any sense. So I knew early on in sobriety that I had just like a different relationship to alcohol than other people did. And I also remember this thing in like middle school doing like the fucking alcohol education classes where it was like, you know, talking about like how much is one drink and all this shit. And I just remember the person saying like, you know, as long as you're not drinking to get drunk, like things are okay. And I was like, drinking to get drunk? Is there another fucking reason to drink alcohol? That shit tastes nasty as hell. Like I'm not drinking it because I like the taste. Like I'm trying to get fucked up. And apparently other people don't feel that way. It's very confusing to me. So there's that. There's the physical craving part of it. And there's also this mental obsession. And the mental obsession that it talks about in the literature is the strange, like, totally ridiculous belief that somehow, someday, I'm going to be able to drink normally. Which also, as I've shared with the incident with the solo cup, that just doesn't fucking happen. And when it does, when I do have like small amounts of alcohol in a night, I end up going fucking crazy and acting like an asshole because I can't get more. And there are a few other examples of that happening, and it's always the same. And then there's the spiritual aspect of the disease of alcoholism, which for me is this like terminal uniqueness and this belief that the world is out to get me and that like no one could possibly fucking understand the pain that I've been through. And if you're in the room and you feel that way, you're in a room full of people who feel that way. So I don't know if that helps. I mean, and that's not to say like those feelings aren't valid, like they are. It's just like, it's just amazing that this disease does that to all of us. You know, moving on, like with step two, you know, when I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, like first of all, I had to admit that I was insane, which was easy for me to do. I mean, I looked at my behavior. I was the guy that would like steal your shit and help you look for it. Literally did that. And I knew that my best thinking didn't work very well. Like, it got me to a place where I needed to fucking go to AA when I was 19. So there had to be something, some power that was, like, helping me do this, which at the time it was easy for me to be like, oh, yeah, God. And then, like, now I don't know how. I mean, I definitely believe in God, but it's much more nuanced than it used to be, as I've stayed sober. Step three, turning my will over to the care of God as I understood him. When I came to believe, it was sort of like the next logical step was like, obviously if there's something that's out there that's trying to help me, like I'm gonna like try to do what that thing is. And for me, step three was just like basically just saying a prayer and agreeing to continue on with the steps. So I have about 5 minutes left. I was going to try to go through all 12, but maybe I'll just say that, you know, the inventory process was really important because I got to see that I had been playing the victim my whole life. And there are things that happen to us that are not our fault, definitely. But, or I shouldn't say but, and also, I tend to have a worldview that is every single thing is about me and it's against me. And looking at an objective look of my life, I got to see that even in situations where people had done really fucked up shit to me, you know, it had been like 10 or 12 years since the thing had happened, and I'm like still making it this huge deal. And maybe I can just go get help. And I mean, I don't know. It's a hard one for me still. But it definitely helped me turn it around and say, like, I have a part to play in a lot of things that happen in my life. In admitting sort of my deepest, darkest secrets to my sponsor, you know, in step five, and like talking about all the shit that I thought I was going to go to the grave with, like that was also a liberating experience. The amends process is a liberating experience. It's also a responsibility experience where like I go to people and I say I'm not going to act this way anymore, and then I have to like not act that way anymore, which is a shit show. And one of the greatest examples of that is like with my older brother, who like I used to steal from him, and I was really generally like a little shit to him. And I, you know, through the amends process, I got to rebuild our relationship, and now, you know, I got to be the best man at his wedding, and now he's going to be one of two best men at my wedding because I couldn't not have both of my best men. And it's a long story. And I get to be an uncle to his kid, which is really fucking beautiful. A lot of things have happened in, you know, God willing, if I don't pick up, next Friday will be 9 years, which is like... But a lot of shit has happened, and the things that have been consistent is like I come to this meeting. This has been my home group the whole time I've been sober. I do service. I try to do service at least. And, you know, being around people who... I guess the best way I could say it is like this is the first place in my entire life ever that I felt like I could be true to myself, and people would be accepting of me. Like, I never had that before. And that's why for me, AA and this meeting in particular is like such a special and sacred space. And it's my job as someone who's been around for a little while to make sure that this remains that for people. So there's some like burden of responsibility with staying sober for a while and being an AA and being trying to be a power of example. I definitely don't do everything right. Like I said, I got sober when I was 19 years old. I was still living with my parents. I was like a little fucking kid. I did a lot of stupid shit. I did a lot of sick shit. And you know, thank God I've been able to work a spiritual program and change the way I behave in the world. So I have like a minute left. This always goes by way too fast. I feel like I could talk for 45 minutes. So the sort of last little bit that I'll say is like the most amazing thing in my life today is that I have a group that I can go to and feel safe and feel like I'm a part of. And, you know, I've made so many friends in this room and continue to do so. And I think the alcoholism is a disease of isolation and loneliness. It wants me to be alone. And this is like my best insurance policy against that. So it's pretty cool that I get to do this. And, you know, I'm getting fucking married a month from today, which is another crazy thing. It's just like... And these are miracles for me, because when I came here, I really believed that I was going to be alone for the rest of my life. Like, when I came here, I thought you guys were all going to find out. I don't know what you were going to find out, but you were all going to find out. And then it would all be over, and I'd be alone again. And all I've had to do is just keep showing up, and I haven't had to be alone. So if you're new, or counting days, or coming back, or you're here for a while, or anything, if you're in this room, you know, we do recover from alcoholism. Like, I've been through some fucked up shit, and I haven't had to pick up. And not only have I not had to pick up, but I've also gotten to live this life that is completely beyond my wildest dreams. Like, completely. My wildest dream was becoming a shaman somewhere in, like, New Mexico and just, like, meditating by myself with a bunch of drugs and just, like, never talking to any humans again and just, like, dying by the age of 30, you know, that kind of shit. And the life that I have today is, like, I'm in fucking graduate school. Like, I fucking graduated from college after, like, basically failing out. And not because of my own shit. It was because I listened to what people in these rooms told me to do. And now, like, yeah, I could just keep talking, and I'm already almost 2 minutes over. So I want to hear from you guys. Thank you for letting me share.